Okay, folks, we've got a lot to do today, so if we want to maintain our record for efficiency in meetings, we need to get started. Just a couple things from me. I'll keep my report brief. I had sent out an email to all the senators and also to newly elected senators to attend this meeting because traditionally, and it's the April meeting where we do our caucusing and assign committee work and so on and so forth. I know there are people just ready to leap out of their chairs and nominate people for chair. So that'll be exciting. If there are newly elected senators in the room, would you please stand? All right. Don't sit down yet. Don't sit down yet. I only want you to sit down if you've been a senator before. So in other words, if you're a newly minted senator, will you remain standing? So here's our future folks. Let's encourage them to get involved. I can assure you will learn more about how this university works in 2 years than you could ever imagine. Thank you very much for your service. And then just a reminder, when it comes to voting on stuff, you newly minteds have to wait until August. So don't grab any ballots or jump up in rage. Well, you can jump up in rage, but it won't be official. That's it for me. Jennifer?
Just a reminder, if you're a new senator, there's a blank signing sheet. Please put your name, your department, and email so I can make sure the lists are accurate. I would hate for you to miss any of our exciting emails. Other than that, welcome aboard.
Wonderful. Molly?
I didn't mark it.
Well, I don't really need one, but... For the new people that are here, I'm the representative of COSFL. It's the Coalition of Senate Faculty Leadership, and I am your representative from WKU. There has been some excitement, but I probably am going to let Dr. Minter just address all that, and it's been on the COSFL listserv and everything. But welcome, new senators.
Very good. Thank you. Patty?
I'll post a longer report later to the Senate webpage after the full board meeting, which is a week from tomorrow, 9 a.m. down at the new Alumni Center. The agenda will be out tomorrow. In the interest of time, I want to report on three things to the Senate. First, the Board of Regents committee meetings on March 29th. Secondly, the special called meeting of the board regarding the move to Conference USA. And thirdly, the duties of a Board of Regents member in relation to a matter before the Senate today. First, the committees. The Board of Regents met on March 29th, and in regard to the tuition issue, which I'm actually going to let Dr. Emsley speak to that, although, I know, down the line, because everybody wants to share the good news, and he was actually there today. So, but in regard to the tuition issue, you've now seen President Ransdell's email, and Provost Emsley can elaborate. On behalf of the full Board of Regents, prior to today's vote at the CPE, Board Chair Higdon and Student Regent Dodd signed a letter to the CPE urging them to approve a 5% tuition increase, and it was done on behalf of the entire board. The following week, on the COSFL list, we received a request from the faculty rep on the CPE to invite faculty members to provide faculty perspective on the in defense of their institution's request. So my response will be posted as part of my report on the Senate website. But Dr. Kirby and I represent all faculty regents, represent their bodies on the COSFL, and it's a very useful forum. I know that our faculty rep did her best to represent for our interests. Again, as I speak, the decision has been made, and I don't think 3% is adequate at all. However, I do want to thank the faculty, the staff, the students, the Board of Regents, and the administration for collaborating to make sure that our voices were heard, and this was a truly collaborative effort. And I don't think we should be discouraged that it did not work. Again, it's nice when we can all speak with one voice. We did. I'm extremely proud to have been part of that effort. At the Academic Affairs Committee meeting on the 29th, Regent Dodds brought forward a motion from the floor, which I seconded, to discuss the study abroad fee in our committee meeting. And this seems entirely appropriate, because the board has fiduciary responsibility over all tuition and fees. And as members of this body know, there have been many questions raised about transparency and accountability, both here and in the Student Government Association. A strange confusion followed at the committee meeting, as University Council argued that bringing a matter off the floor violated open meetings law, which I don't think it does. The chair ruled it out of order at the time on the basis of bylaws, but I am very pleased to report that this effort has borne fruit, because the study abroad fee will be an agenda item at our June board meeting, and it should be. So I'll continue to keep you posted as we continue to work together for accountability and transparency on this issue. The following Monday, as many of you know, a special called meeting was held on April 1st, and a quorum of the board approved moving forward to move to Conference USA effective July 1, 2014. Athletic Director Todd Stewart provided the board with financial information that suggested that this move makes good financial sense. So, therefore, as reported in the Daily News, I suggested that this also provides another opportunity to move to a self-supporting model for the athletic department. In particular, I suggested it's time to eliminate the student athletic fee and at the very least to quit escalating it on a cost of living index called the HEPI, or Higher Education Price Index. Now, I can't tell you that in that moment the president was terribly receptive to either of these ideas. However, he did respond that we could discuss the possibility of eliminating the HEPI escalator, and that's a great starting point, and I will happily continue the discussion from there. Finally, to address one of the Board of Regents' main duties, the board serves as the university's fiduciaries. We protect the financial interest. We manage risk at the university. With that in mind, I want to speak to something that's on the agenda today. It is not in the best interest of the university for this body to endorse the student productions policy. I argue that it is blatantly unconstitutional for three reasons. First, every argument made in this policy has already been rejected by the Kentucky Court of Appeals, State Supreme Court, and various federal courts in every circuit in the United States. Secondly, attempts to implement content-based regulation are generally regarded as worse restrictions on speech than other forms of regulation. This is clearly content-based regulation, and attempts to classify speech as conduct have consistently failed in courts to pass constitutional muster. Thirdly, and most importantly, WKU is a public forum, so its officials cannot regulate speech, however well-intended, period. We should help prevent WKU from making decisions that will break the law or get us sued, and this will. So, as always, I thank you for staying in touch, and please let me know if you have any concerns. If you have any questions about the board agenda, it will be posted tomorrow. Thanks.
Dr. Emsley? I'm going to give you a chance to do agenda item A before I start, if you want. Did everybody approve the minutes of the last meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah, never mind that. Okay, fine.
Go ahead.
Then we won.
Thank you.
I've lost my piece of paper. Thank you. Okay, in terms of recommendations, 01 Graduate Council, 02 University Curriculum Committee, both approved. Academic Program Review, approved on the web. Faculty Credentials, approved on the web. Clinical Faculty, approved on the web. Student Teaching Assistants, approved with a redaction. And if you recall last Senate, I had a challenge to a 5% rule, which I don't know how it got there. The recommendation I got from the Senate suggested I remove it. I accepted that recommendation, and that 5% clause is removed from the version that you should now see on the web, and I'd like somebody could verify that. That'd be great. I think
the version on the web is clean. And the mission statement revision will be on the Board of Regents, I believe, at the July retreat, the revised mission statement for the university. As Regent Minder said, I'm fresh back from Lindsay Wilson College in Columbia, where the CPE met today, to do a variety of things, amongst which is to approve what they call a tuition cap. And that staff recommendation in that cap was, as by now you've heard, 3%. But I want to stress that is 3% on resident, undergraduate, face-to-face courses. The council allows campuses the discretion to set what they call market competitive rates for for graduate and online courses, and they actually have a floor, not a ceiling, on non-resident. They say that the non-resident shall be at least twice the resident, and if you want to go lower than that, you have to request an exception. So that was the action. Now, I would characterize it as not one that was taken hastily. I think it went for about an hour and a half, the discussion. President Ramsdale served the interests of this institution extraordinarily well. He was accompanied by President Wayne Andrews from Morehead University and engaged the council in what I can only describe as a lively discussion, likes of which I've seldom seen at a CPE meeting. And in fact, the council encouraged more such discussion moving forward and engagement with the campuses as these important decisions are made. That having been said, yes, we're looking at a 3% cap on those particular courses. If you were at President Ramsdale's forums, with a number in your head of $6.5 million for 5%, and if you're mentally dividing by 5 and saying that's $1.3 million, it's not. Because that 3% cap only applies to a subset of courses. So we're evaluating the fiscal impact of that. The vice presidents will be meeting, and there should be an announcement sometime next week of how we're going to address this, but the highest priority is to protect jobs. Highest priority is to protect jobs on this campus. We've said it, we'll keep saying it. And in particular, as far as academic affairs goes, we had reserved about $450,000 of what we call the staffing plan, money that was available in the recurring budget as a result of vacancies that occurred the previous year. And we've been holding that back, not entirely sure what to do with it, but now we are fairly sure. I've been given successive green lights to move ahead with a market equity plan to adjust the lowest paid ranks in our faculty. And if I mean that, I say you take Department X and you look at assistant professors, associate professors, and professors, and you look at the percentage relative to our benchmarks, this new set of 18 benchmarks we have, and you look at the ones that are the lowest of the low in those ranks, and we're going to bring those folks up. And the deans have been given dollar allocations based on how this all worked out, and the list of the people that are affected, and they are currently working on how to assign those market equity dollars. So we are moving forward with that, and so there will be no searches frozen. All searches are continuing. The staffing plan next year will continue, I believe, as normal, and we will be doing this small, but it's a step in the right direction, market equity adjustments to make sure that we address faculty compensation as best we can under the circumstances. With that, I have a brief presentation for you on a completely different topic. And Jennifer, if you could go from the beginning. Okay, this is Kahia, which sounds like a Hawaiian island. It's not. It's the tentative name we have given for something called the Kentucky Adult Higher Education Alliance. And if you want to just advance, thank you. Let me give a little background and timeline for this. And if you're one of these people that counts slides, there are 6. So you can tell when I'm finishing. As we look at enrollment and the pipelines for enrollment, the traditional high school pipeline is saturating after years of 4.1% growth. Forecast the next 5 years is less than 1%. Transfer students, KCTCS enrollment is down 10% this year. That pipeline is finite. That plus a combination of market factors in the economy, the need for jobs, skills, credentials, for enhanced career opportunities for adult learners, means I think more and more adult learners will become a more important part of our student profile. That's also recognized at the state level. And the CPE proposed this concept they called the Commonwealth College, which at that time would have been a kind of independent entity awarding degrees through the university somehow, but a student would get the credential through the Commonwealth College, and aimed at adult learners defined, and I'll get to some of how you define it, it's not exactly clear, but they have identified a population of adult learners aged 25 to 44 who have attended some college but did not graduate, and there's over 1 million of those in Kentucky alone. So this was the targeted population. This was this Commonwealth College idea was circulated for some time. Various groups weighed in on it. And at the President's Council on January 23rd, basically the President suggested an alternative approach. Rather than creating a new entity, they suggested an alliance, a coordinated approach to offering adult learners the credentials that they need, that employers wish them to have, and doing so in an accessible, affordable mode that will cause students to enroll. The President's proposed a 90-day timeline, this is in January, so if you do the math, we're right at it, to outline a model framework. That was passed down to the Provost Group, this is the Council of Chief Academic Officers, of which I'm a member. We discussed that in March. Very important step in the middle. We assigned a task force, and I led that, and we had a meeting down at the Nicely Center on February 28, March 1, with a group of people, Beth Lavis and Dennis George and myself from here, plus other representatives from the other Kentucky publics, including KCTCS, to discuss how best to do this. The concept we came up with at the end of that is based on an existing alliance that started off in the middle of the country. It's called the Great Plains IDEA, or Interactive Distance Education Alliance. It has now spread. The concept's still the same, but there are Great Plains IDEA members in Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Kentucky, North Carolina, and so forth. So we came up with a straw man, what I call proof of concept document. It was submitted to the Provost Group in March. It was endorsed by the Provost Group, and Dr. Carla Hughes, the Provost of Moorhead, and I submitted this to the President's Council on April 3, so we're talking 2.5 weeks ago, and the President's Council endorsed this concept and encouraged us to move forward with it, and at that point, I said, okay, it's time to share this with the campuses because this looks like what it's going to be. Okay, Jennifer. So the basic concept is an alliance. All 8 Kentucky public institutions play to deliver a set of academic credentials, whatever they may be, stay tuned, aimed at an adult learner, whatever that may be, market, delivered via accessible modes, whatever that may mean. Each campus will have a campus coordinator to coordinate activities of the alliance, but the main thing that defines this is it does not involve a whole bunch of course transfer. And Great Plains has been doing this very effectively for years, and it works extremely well. A student enrolls, let's say, at WKU to get their baccalaureate degree in skydiving. And we can't offer an entire baccalaureate degree in skydiving all by ourselves, at least not in a mode that's perhaps modular, perhaps on demand, online accessible, whatever it may be. But collectively, maybe 3 or 4 other universities within the state and us, we can do it. So the parachute packing course might be at Moorhead, the how to fly an airplane course or whatever might be at Eastern. We put this package together. The degree is awarded by the home institution. And the courses taken at the other institutions are not transferred onto WKU transcript. They are recorded as WKU courses through a cross-listing agreement. So that instructor at Eastern is actually one of our instructors as well. They're on our faculty, they're SACS credentialed, they're in our database. That course shows up in our catalog. It just happens to be taught by one of these remote faculty working for us at a distance. And so all the course transfer issues they don't exactly go away, but they're vastly more simplified. The home institution collects the tuition. To the student, this is therefore rather invisible. The student enrolls at WKU, they pay their tuition to WKU, they take a whole bunch of courses, mostly online, and they get a degree and a transcript from WKU. What's kind of invisible to them is many of the instructors and courses that form that degree are actually offered by other members of the Alliance, what we call here the teaching institution. The student may pay the tuition of WKU in this context, but we don't necessarily keep it. That tuition gets redistributed to the other institutions that are teaching the course. So, if there's a different degree in scuba diving at Eastern and we are contributing to that, we would get the tuition dollars that the student paid to Eastern would be redistributed through some central agency, and the instructor teaching the course here would receive dollars directly from the coordinating agency. And that's a really nice part of it, because then that's like this consulting. It's not necessarily part of your normal teaching load. And so faculty could, if this works out, get additional compensation for participating in this alliance. Okay. I think I've kind of covered most of this, actually. The student, again, for the student, this is largely invisible. It works extremely well. When I was at Oklahoma State, I was part of this, and it just worked fine. I think I've covered all that. Thank you. Issues to resolve. There are many. All we have at this point is a proof of concept and some draft documents that form the basis of something that we can work on to make sure it really works and works well. First, we have to do some market research on what credentials are appropriate. We don't want to just simply duplicate what we already have. If we already offer an AB in history, fine, we offer an AB in history. There's no point in reinventing the wheel. Unless an adult learner wants that AB in history in a different format or a different mode or a different schedule, then we might have to offer that AB in history through the Alliance. But we're not only going to do that if there's a demand from the adult learner population for an AB in history. So we need to do some serious market research on what credentials these adult learners seek. We need to define an adult learner. That could be a variety of things: chronological age, time since last enrolled in college, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We need to look at acceptable modes of delivery. Now, WKU is way ahead of the game in this in terms of our online delivery through Dealo. That's very good. But we're going to look at things like on-demand. KCTCS is this on-demand opportunity where students can take a KCTCS course in modular form. A typical course might have half dozen modules in it. You get the credit when you complete all six modules, but they are distinct and be completed separately. And you can kind of enroll and finish the module kind of on your schedule. You don't have to wait for the next semester to roll around. Coursera, if you know, does hex semesters. They start courses six times a year, not two. We need to look at technology aspects, especially if students are enrolling in courses at six or seven different places. We need to make sure that the technology is fairly seamless. Prior learning assessment, which I believe is something coming to this body fairly soon. It's working its way through the committees, a policy on the ability to offer portfolio-based learning assessment, which is very important for adult learners who may have a huge gap to fill between the 35 hours of college credit they have and a 120-hour baccalaureate degree. The pricing structure. Should this be a common price as it is for Great Plains, or our own pricing with maybe the employers contributing and possibly the state contributing through scholarship program for these adult learners? All this to be figured out. Who counts the graduates? An example I just mentioned with a WKU skydiving degree, we would count that graduate, and the folks over at Moorhead and Eastern may not think that's fair because they taught half the courses. And again, we can work this out. I suspect it will even out. And a very important consideration, which we don't have a simple answer to yet, but which we will work on, is how to differentiate these courses from courses taken by our traditional student body. We're not trying to replace the mission of the university here. We're trying to add an element to it. But if a traditional age student wanted to take that BS in skydiving, could they in fact do so through this alliance at a different price point and through a different set of procedures than they would earn a degree typically. This is intended, again, as an add-on to address a specific population, not to replace what we're already doing. So, in the last slide, the next steps are, we met last week to assemble some sort of teams to flesh out some of these documents, which only exists in draft form right now, present the concept to all the campuses, that's what I'm doing right now, and the CP at the same time is sharing the concept with the legislators in the hope that they will accept this as an appropriate response to the Adult Learner Initiative. And the tentative timeline is to put all this in place so that students can start enrolling in fall of 2014. And with that, I will accept questions. Yes?
Why did this degree in skydiving still have to get approved as a WKU degree throughout the curriculum?
Yes. And it would be approved in the draft documents that we have written. It would be put together by a program committee, which would involve faculty from all the campuses that contributed. And any home institution, now it may be that for the skydiving degree, that two campuses could be home institutions. And you'd have to offer some reasonable percentage of the courses to be considered a home institution. You couldn't just offer like one course. And if you're... It would go through CPE approval in the usual way, with each campus agreeing to put it on their course inventory, but CPE would approve it as an alliance degree. There's a thing called the John Graham Smith Foundation, and they are looking for innovative ideas right now. We're preparing a proposal to these folks to try and get some dollars to get this process moving along, by the way. I meant to mention that. Yes. Yep. Collect. Right now, we're looking at undergraduate only, Colette, but that's not a restriction. Great Plains' idea started off as a graduate in actually human and environmental sciences, so there's absolutely no reason why you couldn't do this for graduates.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, Kelly.
Something you said earlier about the policies that you approved, going back to earlier.
Oh, wow. Okay, yes, the policies I approved, yes.
And you said about the student evaluation.
Yes.
But in the minutes it says it's tabled and they comment from graduate.
That's not the recommendation I got.
It says tabled and they comment from graduate. That's evaluation orientation student teaching assistance.
I mean, I'm happy to undo that if you want, but the recommendation I have, I believe, is to move the policy forward. Is that right, Mike? University Center recommends the provost seek continued approval of the evaluation orientation of teaching assistance policy. I'll be more than happy to, Mac, whatever you want to do with that, but...
Thank you.
Okay.
These councils. It is my error, I guess, clearly. I'm not sure how we want to back out of this, but. I'll figure it out and let y'all know. No objections? Great. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes from someone? Let John know who you are.
Christopher Costa.
You know what? It just dawned on me that. That's fine. Any discussion in the minutes? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Corey?
Approved minutes.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, as your friend.
Okay, well, first I'll say I hope that the teaching assistant evaluation policy gets approved one way or another. I'd like to just, I'll try and make it brief as Mac requested, but I'd just like to update you on a couple of recent events. As Dr. Minner alluded to, I did make a motion in the Academic Affairs Board Committee regarding the study abroad application fee, and President Ramsdell has agreed to honor the spirit of that request by placing on the agenda, or a discussion of that fee and other academic fees on the agenda for the June special meeting. I hope that this discussion will yield answers to many of the questions that we all have. And second, today you will be considering the student production policy, and I have to say that in each of my roles as the SGA president, as a member of the Board of Regents, and simply as a student, I strongly oppose this policy and other policies that have the intent or effect of limiting speech on this campus. In the past 2 years, we have seen egregious mishandling of student speech by administrators, and I believe that this policy, if implemented, would be no different. History has shown us the importance of student speech in the marketplace of ideas at the campus, state, and national levels. I believe that it is improper for other students, faculty, administrators, donors, or other stakeholders to determine what is or is not important in this marketplace. As such, I strongly urge you to oppose this policy, and I will do my best to oppose it in each of my roles as well. And finally, this will be my one of the last Senate meetings that I will attend as the student body president, and I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to serve with you this year. I've learned quite a bit about this university and the importance of shared governance in relation to its function. I will always be committed to protecting shared governance against any challenges, and I hope that you share this commitment to preserving it as well, especially as it relates to student government autonomy. A challenge to student governance should be seen as a challenge to all aspects of shared governance. Thank you.
My recommendation to the provost on the teaching assistance policy says to seek continued approval. Part of that continued seeking will involve the Graduate Council. Graduate Council report. Thank you.
Move to approve the report that you should have dated from the March Regular Council with one minor exception. I will point out on the little outline that you gave at the very beginning on page 2, if you'll flip back over under action items, the second area under action items, there's a minor mistake there. The KIN 546, Leadership and Ethics and Sports Healthcare, was actually, that's a mistake there. It was just a sent to Grass, that is that way. It should have been, as I understand, it should have been listed as RSA 546. It is correct in the actual policy, in the important part, but I just want to make sure that people were clear.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion of the Graduate Council report? This is graduate faculty only. Did we have a second? No, we don't need this report. Okay. Graduate faculty only. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? UCC report, John?
I'd like to move the acceptance of the UCC report.
Is there any discussion?
A question. It's relevant to the Graduate Council too, I spoke earlier. The proposed course in psychology, 407-407G, is anybody familiar with psychology? Our understanding had been from the UCC meeting that the course in approvals might be changed to prevent potential confusion with the psychology.
I'm not the major proponent of the course, but in my role as senator here, I'll contact the person responsible for having proposed that number, and I'm confident he is not going to have, he will want this to be worked
right,
out.
Right,
well.
Good for all of us.
So, why don't we exchange information after
sure.
Our meeting with WK?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Thanks, Joan. Academic quality?
We're clean.
Faculty welfare. Is Tucker here today? There is no report. Just a reminder that the results of the work-life survey are posted on the agenda and also on the website under Senate updates, and I would encourage you to take a look at those. The faculty work-life survey has been sent to President Ransdell about a week or so ago. I've not heard back from him. It's also been forwarded to the chair of the Board of Regents, Freddie Higdon. Gen Ed? Yeah, yes.
The faculty work-life surveys from previous years, are those still available on the website, or can they be made available?
I know they are around because Tucker had asked me to find a couple of them. He was willing to make some year-to-year comparisons, for example, 12 to 13. He did 9 to 13. And so as I dig those up, I'm passing them on to him. And I'll see if... Does he? And I'll find a way to get the ones that I can find posted. All of them? Do you know where they are? They're under the documents button, deep in the bowels of the website, probably.
Okay. Well,
look at that. Look how handy. I'm going to tell you, Jen, you're a handy one. You make me look good. General education?
No.
No report. Okay. No old business other than the old business of the Graduate Council's approval, which so we'll move on. First item under new business is the student production policy. In my role as chair, I do not vote, but in this particular issue, I do want to vote, and so I'm going to turn the gavel over to Jennifer, and I will be speaking as a representative of the School of Journalism and Broadcasting. If also my power is chair, I'm going to stay here, and she's going to gavel from over there. And I'll try to keep this brief. And all jokes aside, this production policy is of particular interest to me. Most of you know I teach in the School of Journalism and Broadcasting. If you've ever been over to MMTH, you'll find the First Amendment engraved in glass on the doors, painted on the ceiling. And it is now mounted in hard plastic on the front of every lectern in every classroom in mass media. I can't even test my students on the five precepts anymore because they can just read them. And so while I think First Amendment freedom should be close to everybody's heart, they're particularly close to the heart of folks in journalism and also many of our colleagues in Potter. Certainly, we are aware of sanctions impressed upon historians, philosophers, and certainly folks who are in the creative and the performing arts. I spent 30 years of my life immersed in work to protect First Amendment freedoms in all their forms, and a good part of that work regards those freedoms on college campuses. I've had long-standing opposition to policies of this nature, and that opposition continues with this policy. I think anyone remotely familiar with the First Amendment will see this policy at its core is no different than a pre-publication policy that might be foisted upon student media. Unacceptable. We have a former president of the university who learned that the hard way.
That's right.
The language in this policy, I find, is overly broad, vague, left to broad interpretation by the administration, in my opinion, patently illegal. The language is pulled from sedition laws and from a very narrowly defined Supreme Court ruling about the educational environment from the early 1990s, the Hazelwood case. That ruling was supposed to pertain solely to high school student press. But that ruling is now being used fairly consistently to punish high schoolers when they're not even on campus and when they participate in social media. I bring that up because policies like this, history shows, never go away and they always expand. There are rare exceptions to that formula. No, I'm not a lawyer. So being the wise leader that I am, I've run this policy by probably one of the top First Amendment lawyers in the country, John Fleshger from Louisville. John's a contributor to the School of Journalism. We teach a class every spring called the Fleshger Green First Amendment class. John's response to the policy was very similar to mine. He believes the policy is riddled with problems. He called it broad and vague, and he said, and I'll quote him directly, "I am really questioning the motivation from the administration." Likewise, if I was convinced that administrators would interpret such a policy extremely narrowly, say like the study abroad recommendation was interpreted, I might feel a little more comfortable about it, but I don't. As most bad policies do that deal with expression and speech, it comes gussied up in the word safety, and it plays on fear. So when it comes to discussing fear in the First Amendment, I turn to another Kentuckian, Justice Brandeis. He wrote, "Fear of serious injury cannot alone justify suppression of free speech in assembly. Men feared witches and burnt women. It is the function of speech to free men from the bondage of irrational fears." So how irrational are those fears? Well, maybe in the last couple days they seem a lot more rational. But enacting this policy will not make this campus one iota safer. If anyone thinks that they can predict accurately that it will, I would invite them to my office where I have the magic eight ball. I would find it equally effective in accurately predicting those things. In 1993, Dave Eshelman, a good friend of mine, was shot to death in his driveway by a student because that student failed his press law class. Before Dave's death, I taught press law for 5 years, and not one day during that 5 years did I ever think about a student shooting me to death. I've taught it many years since then, and I think about it now every day. I'm guessing that there were hundreds of policies, laws, statutes, and ordinances in place that day, yet Dave's dead. Fast forward to the Boston Marathon. How many laws, ordinances, statutes, rules, policies were in place? Yet here we are, baffled by senseless killing. It happens. It's the world we live in. I'm convinced that there's no preventing it. And I expect because of the incident in Boston, we'll have some new ordinances. They'll revolve around pressure cookers and backpacks. So if you want to travel with a pressure cooker on the plane, probably ought to forget about it. Backpacks have already been regulated. Many school districts don't allow them anymore. And some that do require that they be clear plastic so that you can see through them. But we have shootings at schools. We have people who would go to those places and do harm. More important than the intent of the policy, if we accept that safety is the intent, is the bad things that can come from well-intended policies. I think to not recognize this or to discount it is folly. So, rather than be a revolutionary, I'll be a resolutionary. I'll be someone who offers some suggestions about what we can do in place of such a policy. As Corey said, we can support the marketplace of ideas and the freedoms ensured by our Constitution. I'm hoping that all those plaques and all that engraving and all that painting in our building weren't just window dressing to appease some accrediting team members who turned up, because that's when it all happened. We can be great teachers in every discipline, which is a way to turn a person's life in the right direction and keep it that way. And we can manage ourselves when it comes to making wise decisions
about what we and our students do inside and outside the classroom. And I think we are all capable of doing that. So I oppose this policy, and I'm done speaking. I'll take my gavel back. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. And I'll entertain any other action on this action item. Rarely do my remarks make rooms speechless. Well, that's not true. My classrooms are kind of like that. Nah, they're all busy falling asleep. If a motion. We need a motion to act one way or the other, and then we might want
to
vote.
I'd like to move to consider this policy. That way we can vote that, correct?
All right, start considering.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
Brian Rita.
Thank you, Brian. Any other discussion? I need a motion to I need a motion to approve. I need a motion to not approve. I need something here. Yeah.
English motion to disapprove.
Second, Hanley.
I have a motion and a second. Very good. Now, any discussion?
Okay, I want to make sure that I understand this. The motion is to disapprove. So we have to vote yes, and then the motion will not carry. Is that correct?
Yes. Sure.
I have a question for the provost. It's my understanding.
It's my understanding. It's my understanding, given our discussions at the SEC, that administrative counsel is perfectly willing or possibly might go forward with this policy regardless of the wishes of the SGA and the Faculty Senate. I'm wondering if you might speak of to the rationale of that decision, if in fact it's a decision that might be forthcoming.
I won't exactly answer that question, but I'm going to ask one related to it. It's policy 0003. Requires that the responsible officer for a policy, and that because it's got a one point on it, is me, although I want to stress I didn't write this. It was written, believe it or not, by faculty members in journalism and broadcasting in response to an incident that occurred about a year and a half ago involving an incident in mass media with students running around screaming things like sniper, get down, with shotguns and so forth. And we had no idea administratively whether this was real or staged. Turned out, fortunately, it was staged. No one called the police. And the incident managed to pass. But that was the information intent. That was the intent of this. And General Counsel Deb Wilkins started this. She informs me that faculty members in journalism and broadcasting who occupy that building were involved in drafting this. And that's where it stands. Now, to get back to the procedural bit, I don't know, to be perfectly honest, whether we, depending on how this vote goes, we would present this, but I want to stress what the procedure is. I could still present this to AC for approval, but in doing so, I would, by policy, be required to produce a document from CAD and from the Senate stating the extent to which they concur with or do not concur with provisions of that policy, and AC would consider that in totality. So if, a conditional statement, this goes to AC, it would only do so with a statement from this body. So I would submit that we're not voting to approve or disapprove, but somehow the Senate should construct some form of statement that would accompany the policy should it go to AC at some point in the future. Is that clear? So it's not Senate job to approve or disapprove policies, but it is absolutely Senate's responsibility to indicate the extent to which they concur with or do not concur with any policy to whom that is referred to them, and all academic affairs policies must be referred to the Senate. The request that I made as responsible officer to the SEC, which didn't pan out, was to clarify the intent of this. I mean, I understand the concerns that I'm hearing. We have tried, in the very last paragraph of the policy, to say it provides only for required notification, does not involve approval, no one can stop you doing any of these things as long as we are clearly notified the nature of whatever it is. That is the intent. If that's not clear, or is as room for, as it clearly does, a room for ambiguity based on the discussion I'm hearing, we had asked that we work together to try and create something that does provide prior notice of events that could be construed as that which they are not. Not so they could not occur, but simply that we would know what was going on when it happened. That was the intent. If we have failed in that intent, I would again try and encourage us to draft something that addresses that intent.
Before questions, I want to clarify a couple things. I anticipated the school's endorsement of the policy would come up, and that's a patently false statement. Patently false. This policy, when it first surfaced, was discussed among two or three faculty members with an interim director, and they were under the impression that they didn't have a choice, that they had to come up with a policy or check off on one that was presented to them. I spoke with my new director, who said that he met with the dean a few months back and that he's fine with the policy, and that's what he told the dean. It was never discussed at a full faculty meeting, and quite frankly, that our director would support such a policy is disappointing to me, and I told him that. We don't have any problem talking with each other. Finally, yesterday, I sent an email to 25 voting faculty members in the School of Journalism with a copy of the policy. I asked them to read it and to respond to me how they wanted me to vote on this policy. Among the 25, I got 18 responses, all instructing me to vote no. That's the endorsement of the School of Journalism and Broadcasting. Nothing else. As far as the SEC's charge, when this first surfaced, to come up with better language, that task was handed to Guy and myself. We fiddled around with it. We poured some stuff into it. We pulled some stuff out of it. But when you're dealing with bad policy, it can't be fixed. These kinds of policies consistently have surfaced and consistently have been illegal. There's no fixing it. We don't like it, and we're not going to be party to trying to fix it. And that's why we returned it and said, bring it forward the way you have it. Let the Senate make their decision.
I move that we reject this policy in its entirety, and any documents that the Senate must send to any other organization would reflect.
There's a motion on the floor.
There's a motion.
They can retract that motion, right?
Actually, it's substantively the same as the motion on the floor is to not endorse, which would be rejected.
So AAA means to reject. Just to keep everyone on the same.
Okay. The motion is to reject the policy. And there's a second. Is there any other discussion? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Shura Polachek. I'm in the Department of Theater and Dance, and I just wanted to mention there's many ways to make students do appropriate behavior that does not involve a policy. Every time we do a production that will have firearms, we post in the lobby that there will be gunshots in the performance. If we use a strobe light, which there's no laws against as far as I know, we post that there will be a strobe light because it will injure someone with epilepsy. There are many things we do that are standard practice. I have no idea if this is written anywhere, but it's something standard in the theater industry to do this. And we do this in our productions, and we teach this behavior to our students. One would hope that they absorb it. If a student chose to do a performance that was purposely shocking and wanted to alarm people, that would be within their rights. If they were not trying to alarm anyone, they would hopefully follow this policy. Despite the fact that we have not written it anywhere, we are teaching our students appropriate behavior, and one would hope this would go for the university overall. We should not need a policy like this, and as Mac very eloquently mentioned, with a student shooting someone who gave them a bad grade, people are always going to do things they're not supposed to do. And having a policy just that harms many people based on a few people that do things inappropriate does not seem a good enough reason to have a policy.
Is there any other discussion? All those in favor of rejecting the policy say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Next on the list is the academic program coordinator policy. This comes with the endorsement from the SEC. Any questions? Somebody want to put forward a motion? Yes, ma'am.
I have a question.
You know, it's funny you should mention that. I just happen to be a program coordinator. And all those things that you've talked about have come up over the past 7 years. I did get tenure, so that one's off the short list. To be honest with you, in my department, we have coordinators for each of our majors, and it is extremely time-consuming. But we're fortunate that our director does give coordinators a course reduction. That said, does it take care of all our needs? No, not at all. Do we get any additional compensation? No, we don't. It's a labor of love, and those positions are bestowed upon people by the director. He can choose and pick and kick people off and bring people on at his leisure. That's always been the policy. This policy does not address any of those things. But you might want to add to that. He does not want to add.
We are required by SACS to identify a program coordinator for each program. That's what this does.
You know, it's interesting. With my program coordinator duties and my duties as chair of the Senate, I was supposed to teach a 2-2 load this semester. I taught a 4-2. Yeah. It is a labor of love. And the other thing about course reductions is, and I tell my director this all the time, you're taking me away from something that I like to do and giving me something that I really don't. It's not a good swap. It's really not a good swap. I love to teach. That's why I came here. That's why I do this. Okay, great. Do we have a motion? No, we don't. We have a question. Move for approval from Dr. Dytle.
Second.
Have a second?
Darlene Applegate, folks studies in anthropology. I would like to echo the concerns that have been previously raised. I served as our anthropology program director for a number of years and did it without compensation for most of that time, without a course release, and is extremely labor intensive. It even includes responsibilities over the summer break when you're on a 9-month contract and you're coming in when you're trying to get your research and publications done, but you're coming in to do these responsibilities even over the time when you're not actually being compensated for your normal responsibilities. So I think that that issue needs to be addressed in this policy of compensation for the long list of responsibilities that this task would require. And secondly, in section 3A, it's on the last page, procedure, appointment procedure and reporting. I just wanted to get some feedback on how the term generally would be interpreted. that they're generally reporting to and appointed by the head or the chair. I wanted to find out if there is the opportunity for the program faculty to elect or nominate who would be the director and have that approved by the department head or chair. So I just wanted to know that generally truly means that it's not necessarily appointed by. It could be under the discretion of the faculty of the program with department head approval. Thank you.
Darlene, that's there to allow, the intent of that being there is to allow for the academic program coordinator to be the department head, who clearly does not report to the department head. That's what it's there for. If it, again, it can be worded better, but we can get some ramblings about if the head is the program coordinator, blah, blah, blah. But this would be the case where the program coordinator was not the department head. So... Sylvia, does Sachs mention anything about appointment or who appoints? It just says there has to be one, right?
Yep. And I would add that when accrediting people are sniffing around, the workload goes up exponentially. Seriously. It's a lot of work. Any other discussion? John?
I don't know if any of you are
can't hear you.
This is the first document that actually recognizes the Office of Program Coordinator at this university. Previously, it was an in-house appointment at the will of the department. You had no rights, nothing. At least this puts it in some type of document format that you can argue with your department about what your actual job responsibilities are before you get buttonholed and said, look, I need a program director, can you do it? And then your mailbox starts filling out. So I would encourage you, regardless of how you feel about some of the other issues that have been made, to get this in print and we'll fix it later. On behalf of program directors and everyone. Thank you.
Yes.
So I would echo John's sentiment and remind everyone that no policy is terminal, that any policy can be amended, and that this is that it can be after approval of this document, further discussion can happen through faculty welfare or through other meetings if there's discussion to be had by compensation.
Yeah, and I'll be happy to pass along these sentiments when I pass along the policy. Any other discussion? All those in favor of endorsing the policy say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. Next on our list is the Colonnade Implementation Committee. These are courses for the explorations category. If I'm correct, Robert, these are already existing?
Yeah. Colonnade Implementation Committee asked the Senate to approve Anthropology 120, Anthropology 130, Folk Studies 276, Geography 121, Gender and Women's Studies 200 and 200C, and Religious Studies 102. Now, due to my mistake, Religious Studies 102C should have also been included, the University College version of that course. And if there's no objection, I would like to include that in this motion. I move approval.
I have a second.
Second.
Seconded. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Next item is the Handbook Committee proposed amendments, substantive. Kelly, did you want to say anything or... Correct.
There's basically some revisions to the handbook. I will point out I made two errors in identifying the sections. 2013 number 3 says it's section 2A, or the rationale says the same language appears in 4B3, it should say 4B4.
Yeah.
And 2013-04 says in section 2A, or sorry, 3A, it should be 3B.
These particular amendments had come back to the SEC and here and then back, and now the Kelly's chair, they've been further further worked on with consultation with the provost. Does anybody have any questions? Otherwise, I'd entertain a motion.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Do we have any other news, new business other than elections and caucusing stuff? Mark?
Mark Engel, Potter College. Jen, do you have the new recommendation up here? This requires a little bit of explanation, I think. But back in February, the Senate passed a motion related to $150 additional fee that was applied to study abroad. So essentially, this decision was taken to apply $150 to every student applied for study abroad. It was going to apply to summer 2013 programs, even after the cost had been set. So essentially, students were hit with another cost. The Senate passed a resolution to say, we're protesting this. Apparently, a decision has been taken to refund that money, but only for students who are doing faculty-led study abroad programs. There's lots of the students on Keys programs, on various consortia, on all kinds of other programs who will not get that money back. So essentially, they signed up for one thing, they saw the cost, another $150 was sort of magically tacked on, and they're not getting that money back. Now, what we're saying in this document here, you can read through it, it's being passed around, but the idea is that this represents a fundamental misreading of the will of the Senate. What we intended was this fee should be reversed for all students in study abroad programs because they essentially were told about this fee after it was too late for them to, you know, change the decision of the program. They didn't know about this fee going into it. It was applied retroactively, and we think that's sort of unfair. So I guess what we need to do is amend the language in the early in the February recommendation to just be clear that this is just supposed to apply to all WKU students. And actually, I think when this is being sort of written at the last moment, so if you want to scroll around the last little bit, the underlying part in the last paragraph, essentially we want to amend this to change the language so that can I amend my own resolution? Anyways, right now it says to all WKU students. I actually would like to change it to all WKU students in all programs for which the fee will be assessed, so that it's very clear what we mean by this. I mean, this is also concerning because it seems like the idea was relatively clear. I can see from a very legalistic standpoint why the study abroad office may have interpreted it that way, but that was very clearly not the intention of the Senate. And I'm really worried that sort of picking this apart and sort of parsing language to do something sort of convenient, to only refund this to part of the students, is a real problem in communication between the Senate and the study abroad office here. So anyway, this is the amendment. Any questions?
Guy?
I just want to say that it was, so far as I could tell, perfectly clear, given the discussions that took place at SEC and also on the floor of the Senate, that the intention of the Senate was to, you know, safeguard all WKU students. In addition to that, if one, you know, performs a narrow reading on the official announcement about the fee sent out by Dr. Coban on January 30th, that suggests equally so, I believe, that the fee was never intended for anyone outside of faculty-led study abroad students. So therefore, I encourage everyone to read the original, you know, announcement sent out to all study abroad leaders and the language contained in that statement as well as the interpretation of that statement in this recommendation. The recommendation is at the very end. Thank you.
At the very end of this document?
It's the third paragraph of the third paragraph. The faculty senate recommends. That's the recommendation. There are two addenda. We've got the original recommendation that we made.
Whoa! I'm getting vertigo here. Hold on. Yeah, I think you need to go higher.
That way.
Yeah. Can you help us out?
There are two addenda. The first one is the recommendation that we tasked the faculty senate tasked. February 21, and the second is the announcement about the fee that explained the fee sent out to all study abroad leaders on January.
You're talking about this and this?
Yeah, that's just for information, for informational purposes. And the second announcement, the announcement sent by Dr. Coban is there because of the textual analysis of that statement in the middle paragraph of the recommendation.
Okay. I think in the future, if you just like bring a recommendation, a nice paragraph that a seventh grader can understand.
We
Yes.
We asked for feedback. Well, last minute.
Gotcha. Okay, so I need a motion regarding this recommendation. Mark, second?
Second.
Is there any discussion?
Can I make one comment?
Sure, Corey.
A student recently approached me when all this came about, and this individual, she actually received a nationally competitive scholarship to where she will be studying abroad over the summer to study foreign language intensively, and it is not a WKU credit-bearing course. She was recognized on the national scholarship stage, and she's being charged this $150 fee.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I hope that the concerns that have been raised in this body and other bodies as well will eventually be addressed, but I want to make you aware of the extent to which this fee is being applied.
Very good. Dr. Dial?
I must say I'm puzzled as to how Western can justify assessing a fee on students going into programs that Western does not control or staff. It's almost as if we charge students a $150 fee to apply to law school after, you know, when they're graduating or business school.
Don't suggest that.
I mean, I don't know, where's this coming from?
I'm not sure. Maybe they could just roll study abroad into that other gizmo that we heard about earlier where everybody gets degrees from everywhere. And just think it out loud. Okay. Is there any more discussion? I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
My understanding was that waiving of the fee only applied through this summer, didn't apply to next fall and spring. Is that correct? We're asking through summer 2014 in this. Is that a change?
Mark?
As far as I understand, that's correct. They're only waiving this fee for summer 2013. Everything after that point, we charge this fee. And so now it's at least a known cost. When you apply to any study abroad program, you get charged that $150 fee.
Correct. But I mean, this amendment says through summer 2014 to delay it.
It's until summer.
Until, well, that would be next fall and spring, then
would
also
right.
Be.
Well, I think we're taking this to the chance to sort of make sure that we still oppose this fee. We'd like to clear up the language.
We're all right here.
Because at this point, this fee has been collected from people going this program. It's already been collected from summer 2014, or summer 2013.
I guess my understanding is that currently the administration has agreed to cover people going through summer 2013, but not beyond that. And this is asking to not have the fee implemented at least until summer 2014.
Exactly, so we'd have more time to talk about it.
Well, first of all, they're not rebating the fee to all summer students, which is important.
Right. But I'm just making sure I was asking for something right. More than what's been agreed so far by the university. And also, someone that told me that the $150 fee, that maybe they were doing a runaround thing where they were just going to reduce when the scholarships were going to be given out by that amount. Is that correct, or is this... Is any of the scholarship money that people are getting to play abroad being reduced by totally versus absorbing this cost?
Yes, sir.
It's my understanding that those select students who are going to get their money back, that money would come back in the form of an additional $150 topper scholar. Okay. All those in favor of the recommendation say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. I think the next order of business is to elect officers for the Senate year that commences August 1st. I really think it's in our best interest, even though it may seem time-consuming and I know everyone's getting antsy, but having inherited committee roles that had no one on them, and almost 3 months into the fall to fill those, I really feel like it's important that we get as much of that business done as we can today. But before we caucus with committee business, we need to elect a chair, a vice chair, and a secretary. Most of you know this. My term is over. I've served 4 years. I'm grudgingly leaving the Senate.
It's not until August.
Till August. So I'll preside over one other meeting and then I'll disappear. No one will be able to find me. I'm not eligible. John, correct me if I'm wrong. I think you told me you were not interested in serving as secretary.
Correct.
Okay, so that leaves the other offices open.
I've heard that they're
yet. I did. I was like,
I second John Godfrey. Okay, so proceeding forward, I think we'll start with nominations for secretary. We'll work our way up to the top.
Max.
No?
We need to close out the old Senate, bring the new Senate forward.
Yeah.
We do?
We need to get the new people into the seats so that they can vote for the new office.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, we got to do the shuffle. Okay. So if you're departing the Senate, before you go, thank you all very much for your patience and your help. And if you are incoming, take a Royal Imperial Official chair. Make sure you all signed in and set before you go. No, we're done. If you're still a seated senator, please don't leave. We need a quorum here. Things are looking thin, so. Senators who are here and continuing on. Thank you. If you're voting, Senator, please be seated. I really want to get through this and make sure folks can get out of here in a timely fashion, and the caucusing does take a few minutes. So if all voting senators are at the long tables. Okay, Jennifer. We're doing a head count. Everybody freeze. Are you leaving or staying? Okay. Thanks. So much for the no moving. I think. Okay, we're fine. Very good. Okay, we have a quorum. And so, what we would like to do now is entertain nominations for secretary. Let me just say one thing for those of you who are not familiar with all this stuff. It really is not as time consuming as it seems. I swear. It's good work. It's good, hard work. And if you look back at this year and all that we've accomplished and the things that we've been able to do in significant areas, I think anybody who you talk to who says the Senate doesn't do anything or they're ineffective, there ought to be a policy against those people. Robert? Heidi Alvarez has been nominated. Heidi is present and has accepted. Would anyone like to challenge the erstwhile Heidi Alvarez? I mean, I really think it's important that we have contested elections. Okay, I lost too. Trust me. It's a good thing. Okay. Then I guess that would be a vote by acclamation. Heidi Alvarez for secretary. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. The next position is the vice president, whose duties are articulated in the handbook. That person is responsible for running elections. She should be up here right now. Those include departmental elections for senators and also some elections for committee representation that the Senate recommends. And in my absence, she rules supreme. Or in someone's absence, she rules supreme. Or he rules.
Make sure that person will run the at-large election.
Correct. The at-large elections will be falling on the even academic year. Is that right? Yes. Okay. Any nominations for vice president? Mark? There you go. What a sport. She's great. She really is excellent. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to scare anybody off from running against her. Take your shot. No one? Okay. All those in favor of Jennifer Hanley for vice president, say aye. Opposed? Very good. Now, the big enchilada. The chair's position. It's okay. I mean, seriously. And I sent out an email to some folks, and I said, look, this body needs leadership. And there are great leaders in this room. You've all proven it. It doesn't get you in any trouble. God knows I know that, and I'm probably the most apt to get in trouble. And it's good hard work, and you learn a lot about this way function, the way the university functions. And I'll certainly be around, I think, to help anyone ease into the job. Kelly was great helping me, and really after about the first month, you're on your feet, and it just, it's like Groundhog Day, it just repeats itself. Any nominations? Any willing soldiers? Any unwilling soldiers? Okay, so I'll guilt you into it. I mean, it really does reflect, I think, poorly on our group if we can't get someone to be chair.
I look really forward to working with you, whoever you are.
There you go. And me offering all the assistance that you need, your handler. It does not. There might be some advantages to that legacy, but to be honest with you, it's really just kind of minding the ducks. And like I said, after you get through a cycle of the SEC and the Senate, you just start duping files and repeating things over again, and you try to run the meetings more efficiently than I did.
But I'm not trying to throw some water on that. But you never know what's going to come up. I mean, it is a commitment. It is a big commitment. There are several issues this year that nobody knew were on the radar in May, and I mean that you are committing to do that.
I don't think it's an overwhelming or unmanageable, and you'll have no. You would, that person would have plenty of help. Would have a lot of support. And you get to operate at high levels. Lofty. Are you inclined to?
Well, I'm always interested in leadership positions because I think you learn a lot associated with leadership positions. I think you're able to make a difference potentially in leadership positions. But you know, I've not. This is my first day attending a Senate meeting. I'm an instructor here at Western. I've been here for over 10 years, but I've not been on Senate.
You're a savvy pro. Yes?
I'd like to nominate Dr. Margaret Crowder for the office.
Took the words right out of her mouth. And you're willing, I assume, to accept.
I'll give it a shot. If there's lots of support.
Oh, you'll be carried from class to class. One of those things that you see in the movies all the time. I think sometimes, you know, you just got to, you know, you just got to get into it. And it becomes, if you're interested in leadership positions, you will lead. Yeah. Who was that guy who led the band, the Mothers of Invention?
Frank Zappa.
Yeah, Frank Zappa said, you can't get out of it until you get into it. That's my favorite, Frank Zappa. Nominated? Willing? Anyone want to make this a contested election? Yeah? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? I think some applause are in order. Okay, very quickly, if you would get at a table with your unit's people. Pottery Ender usually ends up down there. We're just trying to get an idea of people who would be interested in serving on the standing committees. I'm going to give you some. We didn't prepare any, but if you'll just write down names and emails. I've got some paper up here if you need it. I'll send you something on that officially. Okay. Folks, University College is over here in the middle. Potter is down there. Ogden's over here. CEBS, where are the CEBS folks? They're over here. Okay. Health? CHHS, I'm sorry, yeah. Health maybe at the end of this table. Hey, Robert, folks, before you get started, since I went through this process last time when I got these lists, if when people are volunteering to serve on these certain committees, we are looking for service on faculty welfare, academic quality, Senate Executive Committee, and we are looking for service on UCC, Undergraduate Curriculum Committee. So, make sure that the... Gen Ed. So, just do this for me. I'll give you the list one more time. Slowly. We're looking for service on academic quality, faculty welfare, Senate Executive Committee, which is the steering committee for the Senate, general education, and the university in the undergraduate curriculum committee, the UCC. Now, when people volunteer for service, please print their names neatly with the committee that they're going to serve on next to their names, and it really would be helpful if you could get an email address, because many of the things that they call themselves are not what they are in the system. So that would be very helpful. So have at it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good. Can we get everybody? Sweet. From some folks who said they couldn't. It's been a good year. Yeah.
Second Monday.
That sounds great. I'm going to try to make sure as many of those are done as I can get done. And I can also find who's coming off the university. There's about three or four. Athletic policy, benefits the appeals board. I'll find out who's coming off and we'll start working on those. I mean, it's ideal when you start the year to have those things done. So, oh yeah, and plus if you don't, you get badgered to death. And a lot of times those are dean appointments, so you gotta just keep after the deans. Most of them are pretty good. The only problem I have run into consistently is with business college.
Last time I did it in that.
So there you go.
Absolutely.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yes.
Because
they haven't said yet.
You're doing well. Yeah, we're getting close. We got a couple groups that are still commiserating.
Yeah, it shouldn't be